Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. The director of an agency that investigates cops wants to see police departments dismantled. How can this guy do his job objectively? That is what's trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
Indeed it is. Tamer Abuzaid is a radical anti-police activist that we introduced to you last week. He also happens to be the civilian director of the agency that oversees and investigates the King County Sheriff's Deputies, OLEO, the Office of Law Enforcement Oversight. He is under fire, Abuzaid, for tweets that up until recently no one really knew about. Generally speaking, when we're talking about these kinds of roles, you don't really follow their personal Twitter account all that closely. But when you decide to effectively turn the department Twitter account into what reads like your personal account, oh, then you're going to get some people noticing. You're going to get a lot of notice. He bashes cops on his Twitter feed. He's called for the public to bring down and completely replace the criminal justice system. He supports defunding. And he has attacked his perceived political opponents, like Ann Davison, as fascists and white supremacists. And as a result of these tweets and his conduct, he is getting criticized across the board. This is not merely conservatives calling this out. Progressives are even calling this out. Now, last week, we told you about that March 3rd letter that was sent by the King County Police Officers Guild to the executive, Dow Constantine, to the city council, or excuse me, the county council, outlining their concern with a Twitter sort of statement that he posted on the OLEO account. And I call it a statement because it was originally an email that was sent to his colleagues. Then he screenshotted and he posted it on the OLEO account, which means this is official policy or the official position of the department. Now, he wrote it in response to the death of Tyree Nichols in Memphis. And he claimed that, quote, the entire legal system is rotten. He said that it is, quote, not about individuals or bad apples, but a racist system with convoluted priorities and arrogant situations. I don't even know what that last part means. He explained that we, quote, work within a system that many of us, myself included, believe should be dismantled. And of that system he believes should be dismantled, he said that it cannot be reformed, must be brought down by the power of the people. Almost sounds like he's calling for a revolution. An overthrowing of the criminal justice system. Now, as we spoke with the Guild president, Mike Mancineras, he was obviously upset. He obviously pointed out that this is a problem. This is a guy who's supposed to objectively investigate complaints against deputies. This is a dude who says the whole system is corrupt. Cops are bad. Cops can't be trusted. They only serve to create trauma towards people of color. How can we have someone like this investigate us? And what Abuzaid did here was effectively say to any detective, any deputy, anyone connected to the King County Sheriff's Office, that if they find you guilty or a complaint sustained, that's the better language, you can just simply say it's because this guy hates cops. And you would have sympathetic ears. You should. Now, Abuzaid is very, very active on Twitter, including sometimes during the workday. I'll give him a little bit of a pass on that because we all do it. Except most of us don't post the crazy stuff that he does. His account is called Tamer Like Hammer. So you can, I actually kind of like that.
That's creative. Give him points there.
Well, it's not creative, but I would have probably said Tamer, maybe. But I like that he tells me how to say it. Now, his account is not owned by the county. This is a personal account. Although he does list his official title in his bio, indicating that there's most likely little difference between his personal views and the views of his position of OLEO as OLEO director. And up until recently, it was filled. It's probably still filled with some crazy unhinged posts. But up until recently, it was public. After I went live with my story last night, he turned his account onto private. Now, what's the one thing I tell everyone to make sure they do when they see outrageous things? What's the one thing? Especially on Twitter.
Screenshot.
Screenshot. Why might you want to screenshot?
Because people will make their accounts private.
There you go. And it will be as if he didn't say anything at all. Now, he clearly is not a fan of police. In fact, he served on the Chicago Democrat Socialists of America committee that was pursuing the defund strategy, which, as you know, led to insane numbers of homicide, carjackings, car theft, etc. Now, he says staffing and funding police departments only serves to, quote, perpetuate more fear, pain, and trauma, end quote, on blacks and Latinos. He opined the risk for politicians to say defund the police, meaning, oh, it's just imagine what will happen nowadays if you say defund the police. You're going to just get pummeled by the media. And even though defunding was a success from his perspective, because they defunded police in Chicago, which led to record low staffing for police departments, this particular one, but really the whole defunding movement for police departments across the country. Even though it was a success, he complains that we, quote, we can afford a cop on every corner, but not a nurse in every school. I don't know where he lives in King County. There's not a single law enforcement agency, including the King County Sheriff's Office, that comes anywhere close to being fully staffed. Not even a little bit. He spread at one point a baseless conspiracy that cops who say they were impacted by fentanyl exposure, because we've seen some of those videos and seen some of those stories, that they are, quote, likely stories of cops who are consuming drugs themselves and overdosing. So these cops who are literally in the field, he is saying they probably just decided to smoke fentanyl while on the job. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm sure that that happened. Now, he appears to be sympathetic to the accused Atlanta Cop City domestic terrorists. He blamed police for the death of Manuel Terran, or Torquito. He's the guy who was killed after, as police point out, he shot and seriously wounded a police officer. But folks on the far left seem to think that that was all completely made up, that it was a plant, I guess. He said, mourning Tehran's death, that he, quote, fought for each one of us. Yeah, fought for each one of us by shooting at a deputy or a police officer, seriously injuring him, they say. He seems to defend riots as a response to the Nichols death. He complained that, quote, racists already have their talking points. If protests are too forceful, they'll do their usual riot shtick. If not forceful enough, they'll say you only care when the officers are white. That kind of sounds like he is defending a very violent response, because if you don't, they'll just accuse you of not caring. Now, I don't know whether or not he scrubbed his Twitter account. It sure seems like it, because the tweets that were available before he went private were only available up to about December 2022. There might have been a couple a little bit earlier, but none that he personally wrote that I could see. And in fairness, Twitter has been a little wonky. Thank you, Elon. But he started his account back in 2019, and those tweets are not there. Now, is it possible he just chose not to tweet? Yeah, it's possible. Is it likely? Probably not. I did note, because I went to the Wayback Machine and I looked at a cached version, didn't get a whole lot, but I definitely saw some tweets that he was retweeting from an account called Divest SPD, which doxes police officers. And one of the retweets that he put up, or one of the tweets that he retweeted, mocked a Seattle police officer for getting mental health care. Odd. But he apparently deleted that or unretweeted. Now, if he disagrees with someone politically, he calls them a racist or a fascist or a white supremacist, the same lazy smear that folks on the far left end up using when they can't actually debate any of the issues. When he agrees with a person who happens to be a Republican, it seems like he's equally upset. So Ann Davison, Seattle City Attorney, after Tyre Nichols' death, she posted something calling out the police response and, like, literally everyone. And he decided to retweet that and attack her, calling her out. Specifically, "I know we're supposed to be civil when we disagree, so I'm going to say this in the calmest way I can possibly respond to a fascist who's never seen a poor or black person she didn't want to criminalize. Keep Tyre's name the hell out of your mouth, Anne." This is a guy who is in a county leadership position. Keep that in mind. He tweeted that, quote, "The law and order crowd gives zero bleep about any laws that do not perpetuate the oppression of poor, working class, and or not white people." He said advocating for law and order is a manifestation of white supremacy. He said Republicans are openly calling for Jim Crow laws. He ignorantly argued that a GOP principle is to, quote, "exploit the working class and strengthen a capitalist, Christo-fascist, white supremacist state." And at one point during the State of the Union, when President Biden made some sort of comment about how there can be bipartisan support on some issue, he complained on Twitter, quote, "How are you going to be bipartisan with a fascist party?" He calls the Republican Party a white supremacist party. Tamer Abu-Zeid, the director of the Office of Law Enforcement Oversight, is very, very, very quick to call people a fascist, person a fascist, an opponent a fascist. And yet he urged Chicago students to prevent conservatives from speaking on college campuses, according to one of his tweets. Now, one of his most vile, I think, came from a retweeted video of Jane Fonda. And it was a video about her role, her activist role during the Vietnam War, Hanoi Jane. And in this video that he retweets, she calls for the execution of American prisoners of war, which she says are guilty of war crimes. Now, even she has apologized for what she did. Not a lot of people, especially veterans, forgive her. Some do. They'll never forget. But some don't forgive her. She's tried to walk it back. But she probably shouldn't, because Abu-Zeid is a big fan of that video, apparently. He celebrated her because she, quote, "used her platform to speak truth to imperialist power." Oh, okay, got it. I hope you come to the same conclusion that I did when I started to see these tweets. And there are a lot more that I did not put up, because at some point I had to get on with my weekend. But I spent hours combing through these tweets. It should seem clear that he is not capable of objectively overseeing any alleged misconduct by a deputy. This is a guy who seems to very clearly hate cops. He's out there saying he wants to see law enforcement agencies dismantled and rebuilt. This is an activist. Now, initially, Patty Cole Tindall, the sheriff of King County, through a spokesperson, said she had no comments about the conduct. I sent a follow-up question saying something, my tone was, "Really? Are you sure you want to send the message that after deputies see these tweets, you have no comment? Really?" But what I think the language was, how might you respond to deputies who think you are not supporting them? So she then, or her spokesperson later then said, she's going to go through the complaint and the tweets, and then she'll have a comment at some point next week. She did not wait till next week, because when I posted the story yesterday afternoon at about 3-ish o'clock, all hell broke loose. And a few hours later, she ends up sending an all-staff email to everybody on that King County Sheriff's Office list, staff members, other police chiefs. And she said what she should have said. She called it out. She was disgusted. She said what a lot of, frankly, council members said, King County council members. Because we had Reagan Dunn on the show last week. He called this out. Sarah Perry, council member, who is very progressive. I'm not a fan of her politics. She is super, super disappointed and disgusted, it would appear. We have folks who are actually speaking out, like Rod Dembowski. Again, he is a Democrat who's calling this out. So the sheriff said, I'm writing this email to you because I want to clarify that I do not in any way condone the statements made by Olio director Tamer Abuzaid that were posted on Twitter, which are considered anti-police. I've addressed my concerns through the proper channels, which are the executive's office and this county council. By the way, Dow Constantine's office wouldn't respond. This is a legislative issue. He responds to legislative issues all the time. He didn't want to get involved here. He didn't think that this was going to become a big issue. She went on to say, I've been part of the King County Sheriff's Office family for going on 8 years, and I care deeply about the profession of law enforcement as well as each person who works for the King County Sheriff's Office. I'm disappointed that Director Abuzaid would make such statements given his role in the Office of Law Enforcement Oversight. She ended up saying that she will, quote, take the high road and do what's best for our agency. To me, that means she wants to call him some names, but thinks I'll do it for her so she can take the high road. And she's right. This is a disgraceful person. This is someone who should be nowhere close to being in a position of power over anybody, having anything to do with law enforcement. I will say this in his defense, in a weird roundabout way. I don't defend what he did, but he is an activist. We knew that going in. The King County Council chose an activist over someone who was way more qualified and an actual professional. They went with the activist, only to find out that he acts like an activist. Activist gonna activist. That's what they do. This is what their role is. This is how they see the world. And so when you get someone who is so outspoken, who hates police, who wants to dismantle the system, when you get someone like that and you put them in charge, they're still gonna act out that way. The problem is they will view investigations through that lens. They will make policy suggestions through that lens, which Olio, this department, that's part of their gig. He is supposed to be neutral. I spoke to John Urquhart and Mitzi Jo Hanknik over the weekend. Both of them, former sheriffs in King County, and both of them said pretty much the same thing. You need to be objective. And when you're not objective, you risk losing the public support and you risk further alienating deputies. Sarah Perry, the council member, again, far to the left by my standards, she said, and to her credit, I believe her on this, to her credit, she said, look, I've been working my tail off to make sure that the police departments in the county and the King County Sheriff's Office, they have good relationships with these folks. And when you get tweets like this, you strain that relationship. Last night, I couldn't tell you how many times people texted me who work in the sheriff's office, some of whom had no idea about these tweets, others who got wind of it. They were ticked off. They were mad. They were disgusted. And apparently, the King County Council, some council members, knew about the tweets, started talking about the tweets at least a week ago. And then all of a sudden, it becomes a big story because we covered it. That's the power of not just this show, it's the power of you. You're the ones who allow me to amplify these important stories. I think they're important. This one is so important. This is just part one. I've got part two coming out later tonight at about 6 o'clock at KTTH.com. We'll talk about it tomorrow. But just as a hint, this is a guy, although his personal pronouns he lists as he and they, which makes no sense. It's just so dumb. I don't even know what that. You can't be he and they. You can be one. Pick one. But he clearly doesn't like cops. There's also another group of people he doesn't like. Another group that he doesn't like. And I'll give you a hint. The Jews. Oh, was that a little bit more than a hint?
Yeah, that was more than a hint. I was going to guess that, but then you said it.
He doesn't seem to like Jewish folks or Israel all that much. There are people who say, in response to critics like me who will call something anti-Semitic, they'll say, oh, so you can't criticize a government or policy without being labeled an anti-Semite? To which I always respond, oh, go for it. You should absolutely. I will note, however, that if the only policies that you criticize concern Israel's right to exist, you're going to be an anti-Semite. When you lean into tropes, when you lean into what's clear propaganda, yeah, no, that's anti-Semitic. When you defend Palestinian terrorists, which you happened to do, I think, back in 2001, because I got the image from newspapers.com of a letter to the editor you wrote. And maybe there's someone else in Chicago with exactly the same name and positions that seem to align with what's on his Twitter account. I'll certainly concede that. Seems unlikely. But when you give me the evidence to call you out as an anti-Semite, I'm going to call you out as an anti-Semite. The Israeli consulate for the Pacific Northwest, yeah, they're calling you out as well. So that story is going to break later tonight. It'll be an exclusive. Ask yourself why no one in the media will cover this story. And I say that proactively because I don't think anyone's going to cover this. I know why they didn't cover it to this point, because they didn't look into it. Now, the information was out there. I knew about this for a while. I wanted to do my due diligence and actually report and investigate what I found, or report what I found in my investigation. There we go. But now that it's out there, and now that it's clearly an issue, because the King County Council, they're talking about this right now. They talked about it yesterday. They're talking about it right now. They're going to talk about it tomorrow when we're on this show. They full well know the implications of this story. Ask yourself why no other outlet will report this unless they're basically forced to. Ask yourself why they're going to keep this private, and ask yourself what you can do to help me get more eyes on this story. It was trending all day. It got picked up nationally. Let's see if anyone locally picks it up. I don't think so, so I need your help. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my blog where you can get the story. Text R-A-N-T-Z to the number 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you my story. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Tacoma is expected to open a homeless parking lot next month. And it will be the first homeless parking lot in all of Tacoma. Although I guess I could argue that some of the homeless RVs that are just randomly parked in a group might count as a homeless parking lot. This time it's going to be on property owned by the Catholic Community Services Group. And it's going to house up to 20 vehicles. It's supposed to serve about 40 or so people. Now, they say it's going to have 24/7 on-site management, and they'll have access to services. Now, note that I said access to services in that way intentionally. Having access is not the same as mandating you access said services. It's not a requirement, as far as I can tell. Which is exactly why this is destined to fail and just become another homeless drug den. When you do not push people into services to address the underlying reason that they're homeless to begin with, all you are doing is giving them temporary shelter that ends up postponing the inevitable overdose death or death by the elements from being outside, freezing to death, starving to whatever it is. That's all you're doing, is you're postponing the inevitable. I don't think that that is the moral thing to do. I think we should actually help people. And sometimes that means you approach it with a carrot and a stick. Some folks on the left don't like the stick, but their position has led to the deaths of scores of homeless people whose names they'll never know, people they'll never truly care about. They love their ideological position because it allows them to go on Twitter and claim that they're against stigmatizing the homeless. They're against criminalizing poverty. They're human beings. We hear that all the time, and we're supposed to pretend that their position is compassionate because they tell us that. But just like they tell us a man is a woman, just like they tell us there's no issue at the border, just like they tell us CRT isn't in the classroom, they are just lying to you about the position that they are taking. They hold the opposite of what they claim. Now, there are some aspects to this program that I can't dispute. They say over at the TNT that They'll perform background checks during its intake process to make sure they're not getting anyone who's got a history of violent offenses, of someone who's got a history of sex offenses. They say the vehicles are going to need to be operational and licensed, and that obviously helps elevate the type of person who might go into this parking lot. There certainly are people who live in a car that are, in fact, working and trying to get their lives back in order. They exist. Nowhere near the numbers that folks on the left want you to think, but they certainly exist, and a program like this could potentially help them. What I don't like is that they say two staffers from Catholic Community Services will serve as security guards. That doesn't sound right. Maybe you should get actual security people who are trained. They also say that this comes with a 90-day limit for the homeless to stay. So you get in there for 90 days. After that, you're out. Now, will they go through with their version of an eviction, for lack of a better term? I don't know. I imagine it's going to be tough for them to do that. But at the end of the day, what is the strategy? It's still a housing first model. It's just your house is a car. The housing first model means we give people access to shelter, in this case, subsidized housing, hence housing first. And only afterward do they ask you to go into treatment, get mental health care, whatever it is. They never mandate it. The free housing is never contingent on getting some kind of help for the underlying reason behind the homelessness. They still pretend on the left, or at least they treat the folks who are homeless, or excuse me, people experiencing homelessness. I get paid by the word. They want us to believe that these folks were just born homeless. How'd they become homeless? And why do you think giving them a free house will change the situation when you know that they're dealing with the chemical dependency? You can tell that they're mentally unwell. Why do you think this time something will change? Because you got them a free house? That's not how it works. The exact same behavior still exists. You might not see it out in the open because they're smoking fentanyl inside of their home, inside of their room. But they're still doing it. They're still suffering from that mental issue that we could treat, that we could help. Oh, but we housing first, housing first, housing first. Meanwhile, you've got a park out in Tacoma that is specifically labeled, what is it? Lots for tots. Little parking, park lots for tots. Tots are, or it could be for little potatoes. Probably not.
Though. Don't it's think not it's potatoes.
Tot. It's a park for kids. Except there are no kids ever using this park. It has been taken over by the homeless. Fires have been set, and apparently there's a whole lot of nudity. Now, this comes from Cairo 7 and Deborah Horn, which means you're probably going to hear a whole lot of Deborah Horn unnecessarily insert herself into said story because she loves a man on the street. And she spoke with a guy named Robert.
Every once in a while, but it's usually adults or a dog park.
Or a dog park.
Or a dog park, yeah.
Not kids.
No.
She found the dog park comment very curious. Oh, a dog park, huh? Like with dogs?
But not kids.
But not kids.
That's
Did
what
you
he said
want him to say when that specifically, then just script it out for him? She says, I want, not to pick on her, because she's a legend.
You literally always pick on
Shut
her.
Up. She's my favorite. Her and Steve Kiggins, or Higg, whatever his name is, who I don't even know if he works in this market anymore. She says to herself, I want to get someone on the street who will say this. And then she goes up to the person and coaches them to saying exactly what she wants.
When she uses that in the package, she doesn't have to use her voice. Nobody's forcing her to do that.
It's very funny. Mike, who spoke to Deborah, he explains why you probably don't see so many kids at this particular park.
A couple on the top of the playground having sex at about like 3 p.m., like fully naked, everything.
That'll scare the kids away, or at least the parents. It might attract a certain crowd, I guess. But 3 p.m., erring on park equipment in the middle of the... Yeah. Yeah.
Classy.
Oddly enough, no follow-up from Deborah on that point.
Yeah, that would have been the perfect time to ask one of her dumb questions,
that
right?
That seems like an appropriate time to say,
at
wait, come again?
3 p.m.?
3 p.m. in the middle of the day? What happened? Maybe she didn't trust some of the questions she would ask, because I suppose I would ask inappropriate questions at that. Mike says, without safety measures in place, kids are obviously not going to be able to use this park.
Like, they need to be here on at least like a daily basis, maybe, or maybe at least, you know, every other day, because this park is always inundated with transients. There's no way that a kid could ever even try to use that playground.
I'm glad, by the way, he said transient, because nowhere in the story indicates that these people are homeless. They don't use that term once. I don't even think they used a code word for that. They just say people or adults. This is a homeless problem. Stop keeping that information from us. I don't know if she did it intentionally. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. I doubt it. But this is a story about homelessness getting out of control. Too many times, media outlets are not fully transparent about the issues. We already know they don't connect the dots. We already know that. But my God, this seems like an important part of the story. These are homeless people. Now, after Cairo 7 started asking some questions, after they found what looked, they say, what seemed to be a drug pipe. I know.
The zoom in
just don't,
on
I,
the camera shot, it was so dramatic. A drug pipe, the way she said it, too.
After they pointed this out to Metro Parks decided to up the security patrols there. They now have two security patrols at this particular park on the route. And they say they just recently removed a homeless couple that was there, or two people who are homeless who were there. So if that's sustained, that's good. You still got the homeless crisis. Again, maybe we can put them in a parking lot. And then finally, the city of Lakewood is all like, yeah, we're done with this nonsense. We're done with the open drug use by these homeless people. This is Lakewood. It's not Tacoma. And then Tacoma's all like, whoa, you're way worse than us. We're Tacoma. You're Lakewood. Let's keep that straight. They said, no, we're out. We're done. So they're moving forward. They're banning the public drug use. They're banning overnight encampments from being set up on public property. So if a homeless person, or technically anyone, but if a homeless person is going to continue that behavior, they're going to continue to smoke fentanyl in the middle of the street or on a sidewalk or in a park, causing problems for everyone around them. If they decide to continue to set up camp wherever it is they want, Lakewood police now can put you in jail for 90 days or you'd be subject to a $1,000 fine. Like all the other policies that are very similar to this, they give warnings. They don't want to pursue charges. They don't want to punish, but they need a little bit of a stick. Can't just be a carrot. Now, this particular ordinance will ban weed because that's already illegal in the state of Washington. It's curious. Marysville, we did this story. Marysville said yes. I feel like there was maybe one or two other cities in the state that have done this. Probably a lot more smaller cities. Bellingham last week said, nah, we don't want this. We prefer to have people continue to smoke fentanyl in our downtown core. We don't have any place to put them, which is, of course, nonsense. And even if that was the case, at least hassle them so that they're not openly using. Hassle them enough. Make it inconvenient. We shouldn't be pushing people into getting high. Quite the opposite. Now, the assistant city attorney, her name is Samantha Johnson. She wrote in a letter, the negative impacts of public drug use plagues business owners, homeowners, taxpayers, and future business potential for the city of Lakewood. In 2022, the Lakewood Police Department received more than 3,300 calls for service from one particular area. This is an increase from 2,600 calls for service the same area received in 2021. That's a 27.5% increase in calls for service in a 0.2-mile radius. Something needs to be done. They're doing it. Kudos to them. I hope it's a huge success. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we'll dive into what is very clearly a politically charged, politically convenient way to go after President Trump. We're getting into that and so much more. It's Jason Rand Show. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. The DA in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, backed by George Soros, he resurrected a dead misdemeanor charge against Donald Trump. The feds rejected it because they can't prove a crime had occurred, only to then have a DA known for not charging violent criminals to elevate the misdemeanor that cannot be proved into a felony. I believe it's a Class E felony. It's very, 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 very low on the totem pole. The feds under Joe Biden couldn't prove a misdemeanor, and now it's going to be turned into a felony. The president says he's going to be arrested tomorrow. Now, the claim is that hush money that was allegedly paid to Stormy Daniels wasn't reported properly as sort of like a campaign expense, which has nothing to do with Donald Trump. It really doesn't. I think I believe it was on Fox. I'm assuming actually it was on Fox because it was Jim Jordan. He made a comment about how this is effectively a charge for a bookkeeping error, which actually... Usually I find those kinds of sort of dismissal of charges, I find it to be a little snarky. He's actually 100% correct. That's exactly what it is. Now, Trump comes out, says tomorrow he's expected to be arrested. You have Alvin Bragg, who might be interested, certainly is preparing for a scenario in which he does the perp walk with Donald Trump. Because the point here is to humiliate him and hurt him politically. And they have no problem, Alvin Bragg and any Democrat who supports this, or Republican who supports this, they have no problem abusing the criminal justice system to go after a political opponent. If you had in a prosecuting attorney or a DA who charges like nuts, like that's all he does or she does, they just charge, and then you got them charging Trump, you could at least say, okay, at least it's consistent. Alvin Bragg goes out of his way not to charge criminals. They don't charge misdemeanors in Manhattan. They rarely fully charge felonies. So why exactly is he doing this? We know it's political. They're making security preparations. They've been underway for the last couple days, installing surveillance cameras, which they didn't do during the BLM and Antifa riots that they pretended didn't exist. They're installing metal gating or fencing. They did do that in Portland, at least. But again, the media pretended there wasn't any violence. Trump called for a protest, which Democrats hope turned violent, so they can claim it was an insurrection or whatever other language they're going to make up to describe what potentially happens. Language that they should have used for the Antifa BLM violence that, again, they pretend didn't actually happen. So Senator John Kennedy was on Fox.
Well, in America, you're free to protest. Yeah. You're not really free if you can't express yourself, but do it peacefully. Don't be a knucklehead and riot. Yeah. I mean, do it peacefully.
They are on the left desperate for someone to get violent. It could be one person who's running towards a protest, trips and falls into someone, and they'll say that it was an assault. That's how crazy they will cover if there's any violence whatsoever, or even the threat of violence. I don't think that that's going to happen. Certainly not in Manhattan. There might be some rallies. I take the position I've taken now for, how old am I? 41 years. I don't like protests generally. I just don't. I don't think that they're effective. They could be, but usually they're not. So I don't think it's appropriate to protest. I think you should make sure that you organize, get politically organized, make sure that the wrong people don't get put into office. There's no case here. And at the end, it's only going to help Donald Trump. When they don't end up convicting, they will have proven that this was politically motivated. Here's Jim Jordan.
I think just a ridiculous case that they are bringing. I think the people of this country understand it's ridiculous. We want to talk to Mr. Bragg. We're asking him for the communications he's had with the federal government. We're asking him to come in and testify. We'd like an answer by Thursday of this week.
He wants Alvin Bragg to testify. Probably not going to happen. It should. It should, because I think it's very clear, including to folks on the left. I was talking to a Democrat today who does political analysis, and they told me that there are even some Democrats who, well, at first they were loving it, but then they started to think about what this means and how it's very clearly politicizing the criminal justice system, and then they got a little ashamed of celebrating. That's probably the better position for people to take on the left who loathe Donald Trump. Celebrate for a second and then realize truthfully how far you've allowed your hatred for this man convince you to just destroy institutions, abuse institutions. You think that you're only doing it towards Donald Trump, so it'll be okay. The second you allow for that, you make it possible for it to happen to you. And there are going to be a lot of people who are going to find out that they allowed their judgment, their poor judgment, to propel Donald Trump into another term, which was a point John Bolton made on CNN.
However guilty Trump may be, and having very much in mind the one rule of law for everybody, if they indict and fail to convict in New York, I think historians would look back and say that is the act that reelected Donald Trump president. So I hope those prosecutors in New York are very, very certain of their case.
They probably are certain of their case, but they're blinded by their hatred of Trump. And they're going to get him reelected.